Recording has started.
Great, thank you. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the NextGen RDS-PAP Working Group call on the 7th of February, 2017 at 1700 UTC. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call, as we have quite a few participants online today. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you're only on the audio bridge, would you please let yourself be known now? All right, thank you. And as a reminder to everyone, please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Also, please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn the call back over to Chuck Holmes.
Thank you, Michelle, and welcome everyone to our call this week. This call is going to be a little bit different as we're focusing on data protection That will be a preface to actually doing some deliberation on this call on data protection for collection of thin data elements. So we will start off a little bit differently, but one thing that's still the same, let me give everybody an opportunity to update their to share with us if they have an update to their statement of interest. Any updates, please raise your hand. Okay, not seeing any hands there. What I'd like to do then is bring up the slides from Peter so that he can give us an introduction of the some of the data protection principles and issues that we've been talking about on the list for the last several weeks. And after that, we will let Stephanie also jump in and share some things with regard to data protection principles related to what we've been deliberating on some key concepts the last few weeks. So the slides are up, and I will turn it over to Peter. To let him go over those. Now, we're going to let Peter go through the all of the slides and then let Stephanie share her thoughts, and then we will have Q&A. So, Peter, are you on the call? I'm looking for Peter right now, and I don't see him on the call. So let me ask staff to...
Chuck, this is Marika. Peter is there. He's actually as a presenter in the Adobe Connect. We just need to make sure he's on audio as well.
I scrolled down to look at the bottom of my list, so I missed that. Thank you. Okay, Peter, sorry about that. I'm glad to see our list of participants is long, but I was down at the bottom of it and didn't see you. So, Peter... thank you very much for volunteering to do this, and I turn it over to you. Peter, are you on mute? Because we're not hearing anything. Ah, I think his mic just lit up. Let's find out.
No, that's actually not the mic. It's a symbol for speaking louder. So, Peter, either you need to connect your audio via the phone symbol at the top of the Adobe Connect pod, or you need to dial in, or you can give us your phone number and we can dial out to you. So one of these options. But at the moment, your microphone doesn't look activated.
I apologize. This is Chuck. We should have tested Peter and Stephanie's mics before we started the meeting. That's my mistake. So apologize for that. Stephanie, warning, if we're unable to get Peter's audio fairly quickly, I may turn to you and see if you'd like to share your thoughts first. So just a little bit of a warning there. Hopefully we won't have to do that. Okay.
Listen, Rick, I just saw the microphone appearing, but it is gone again. I don't know. Peter, are you on audio or?
If you can see the chat, Peter, they're willing to dial out to you if you give them the number to call.
I'll be only on the audio connection. I won't be able to log into the Adobe Connect.
And who is that?
Daniel.
Okay. Thank you, Samuel.
Okay. You're welcome.
All right. Let me turn to Stephanie. Let's test your mic, Stephanie. Can you...
Hi there, it's Stephanie. Can you hear me?
I can. You're coming across loud and clear. Stephanie, would you be willing to share your thoughts while we're trying to get the connection with Peter fixed? Is that possible?
Well, I can do kind of backwards because I was planning on supplementing what Peter was saying from the perspective of common law countries and other countries around the world. And just how the concept of purpose is instantiated in law in those countries and in other jurisdictions. So, I mean, I can charge ahead. It's a bit backwards, though.
Yeah, go ahead. And I apologize for doing that because I know I had said we were doing it in the other order. I informed you and Peter of that, so I hate to put you on the spot, but at the same time, we've got 40 people on a call, and I don't want to just do that. Let me give Peter one more chance to say something, just in case it's been fixed. Marika, go ahead. Are you on mute, Marika?
It just takes me a second to get off mute and put in my code. I was just wondering if maybe to buy some time, and I just saw the microphone of Peter appearing again, so I guess he is trying to connect. But maybe I can already give the update under item 4, so we already cover that off and buy a few seconds or minutes to get Peter connected. Although I see again the microphone.
Go ahead, Marika. So we're going to skip to agenda item 4. Allow a little more time for Peter to connect. And then if that doesn't work, we'll go ahead and have Stephanie share her thoughts. Go ahead, Marika.
Thanks. Yeah, we just wanted to give an update to the working group with regards to planning for the ICANN meeting in Copenhagen. So currently there are two slots that have been requested for the working group. One on Saturday from 2 o'clock to 4:45 local time. And the other one, there's a secondary slot that's available on Wednesday from 2:45 to 3:00 local time. I think the current thinking is that the Saturday meeting would be similar to what the working group has done in the previous meeting, basically continuing its deliberations, but having a larger slot available that will hopefully allow to cover a bit more ground. There is, however, a secondary slot available as well, so that is something for the working group to consider whether you want to use that slot either to continue the deliberations from the Saturday session, whether there's another purpose you want to consider for that meeting, for example, you know, briefing the community on where things stand, or another option as well as data protection commissioners are participating, and you know, should they, of course, be still available on Wednesday as well, to have a dedicated session with some of them to go through some of the questions that the group may have. So that's where things currently stand. This is, of course, still draft. You know, the schedule hasn't been published yet, so there may still be changes. But maybe for now you would like to just pencil that in and take note of that for scheduling purposes.
Thank you very much, Marika. Any questions on that? Just to get an idea, how many of you, if you could just put a green check in the chat, if you're planning on, you're definitely planning on attending in person in Copenhagen. If everybody would just put in green checks, if you're, I guess I better do it too, huh? If I'm saying that. Okay. Good number of participants. Of course, as always, there will be remote participation if you're unable to attend in person. And the hours may not be great for some, but good. It looks like there's going to be a good number of turnouts. I hope that those who can't attend in person will participate remotely. So that we have a good turnout there. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. Just wanted to note that I will be in Copenhagen, but whether I'll attend the meeting or not is not clear due to conflicts. By scheduling them in the middle of the, if within the working week of ICANN, you're effectively saying anyone who has other commitments and other ACs, SOs, probably cannot participate or cannot participate fully. So, just so people understand. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Okay, please remove your checks so that we have a clean slate there. All right, so Peter, if you're able to speak, please speak up. Otherwise, we're going to go to Stephanie. Okay, Stephanie, sorry to do this to you. I know it's not ideal, but I appreciate your flexibility and to jump in.
Okay, not a problem, Chuck. I mean, basically, you will find this rather repetitive because I've been making these points in the chat probably with nauseating repetitiveness to some folks. However, here we go. Basically, one of the basic principles of data protection law is there is a general requirement pretty well everywhere in the 109 laws that we have around the world that processing be fair and lawful. And the issue, of course, boils down to what does fair and lawful mean? And fair really is interpreted as meaning that there should be limits to the collection of personal information and that those limits should be focused on the purpose. In other words, while any amount of information is interesting to a data processor or a data controller, that doesn't mean that just because it would be useful, you are allowed to collect it. Now, in the context of most Commonwealth countries and I think in the United States, there has to be a legal mandate for a government department to collect data. This gets much fuzzier in the private sector because public sector, you can easily say that if you're the transportation department and you're issuing driver's licenses, that the data that you gather for the purpose of issuing a driver's license has to be directly related to the issuance of that license, and intrusion into the private life of individuals is not necessarily tolerated. When it comes to private sector companies that are offering a service that is not mandatory, let's say something like Facebook, for instance, is a great example, basically they can define what the user experience is and what data they think is relevant and state those conditions. And in the United States, after the Internet, the concept of notice and choice became kind of the rule in the United States, and because of that, it has spread over the Internet. You have to tell people what you're collecting through your notice, and they have a choice that is supposed to be issued by a consent. And in many, many cases of Internet services, that is a consent that can be kind of take it or leave it. You know, if you want the service, you agree to this. We're all familiar with this from our I'm thinking of my Apple contract, which is something like 80 pages. So having said that, the restriction of the collection of data to that which is necessary specifically for a purpose is a key focal point in data protection, and therefore defining the purpose is fundamental. And I may be saying something that Peter is going to say here, but the data protection commissioners of Europe and of the International Working Group on Data Protection and Telecommunications, which I would guess is an international group, it's not just the EU guys, they have written numerous times saying, please specify the purpose of collection. And ironically, so have the ESSAC written saying, please specify what the purpose of collection is. So in many respects, security people have similar concerns to data protection people because the collection of information involves a security.
Hello?
So,
hello? Oh.
Hello?
I hear my voice.
Wonderful! Am I ever glad to have you back. Now, would you like me to stop and let Peter jump in here?
I let you finish, maybe.
Okay. All right. So I'll carry on. So basically, the way this has been sorted, and it's important to understand that between the civil law and the common law, there are certain differences. Also, when you're evaluating data protection law internationally, you have to look at a number of things, and one of the key documents that you have to look at is the Constitution, where the protections against unreasonable search and seizure are usually spelled out, and any charters of rights that may or may not exist. In Europe, obviously, there's a fundamental charter, which Peter is going to talk about. In Canada, we have a fundamental charter. That's not necessarily the case in, for instance, all of the Asian privacy laws, and I refer you, if you're interested in how this sorts out internationally, to Graham Greenleaf's excellent book on Asian data privacy laws, where he looks at a series of laws in comparison to see how they translate these fundamental principles, many of which came originally from the OECD guidelines. So what we did in Canada was we basically went in the private sector legislation, as I say, in the public sector legislation, there has to be a legal, a law that authorizes you to gather certain data, and you have to play within those laws. But in the private sector, when the private sector law was drafted, we basically followed a variant of the OECD guidelines, namely the Canadian standard, that says you have to be accountable for your data collection. The purpose must be limited, but you need to state that in your notice. And then when that hit Parliament, the clause was added that the purposes have to be what a reasonable person would think was appropriate under the circumstances. Now, the reasonable person test is a pretty well-known test. It's called the man and the clap of omnibus. Basically, what would the average person think was acceptable under the circumstances for you to gather? So keep that in mind. What does the man in the Clapham Omnibus think is appropriate for ICANN to designate should be gathered for these purposes? What is the purpose of ICANN, in other words, in the gathering of personal information? So I think a lot of the confusion that we have been experiencing, in my view, is the fundamentally different way that, say, Peter and I are looking at the expression of purpose to potential uses of personal information. We are not arguing, basically, that these potential uses are not useful, they're not relevant, they're not appropriate in certain circumstances, but that potential use for other purposes, we would call them secondary purposes in my jurisdiction, is not a sufficient reason to include it as the purpose of collection. These are subsidiary purposes. So I think that's probably enough from me. I would be certainly very happy to answer any questions on this. And if I haven't gone into enough detail, I'm happy to jump in and give further detail. Thanks.
Thanks. Susan, thanks, Stephanie. I saw Susan's hand, our check mark. So I'll come back to you. This is Chuck. So I'll come back to you after Peter does his presentation, and then we'll open it up to the whole group for Q&A. So so you'll get a chance to follow up on other points after Peter does his presentation. So, Peter, welcome. Sorry for the technical glitches. Please. Share your thoughts and your presentation.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm very happy to be on the call, and it's my mistake. I maybe messed up something. My mic said it's on, but obviously you could not hear me. So, but now I think you can hear me, and I just want to run quickly through the slides I've prepared and to highlight some of the issue I thought it might be relevant for the discussion, which is ongoing on the RDS PDP. So, but first, I would like to start from a global perspective, as I certainly coming from a Council of Europe and from Europe as a continent, but privacy is not a European issue anymore. We see it as a global one, and not only we, but all privacy professionals, and not only privacy professionals, but professionals I had the chance to speak with are seeing privacy as a global issue. And certainly, we have differences in our legislations, maybe on the articulation of rights to privacy, and moreover, on the execution and the enforcement side, but I would like to stress that the right to privacy is a universal human right. It is declared by Article 12 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and Article 17 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. It is very important to know this at a global level, because human rights are designed, legal system are designed differently and have different legal mechanisms as the articulation, for instance, of a state interest. Normally, we have globally, we as nations of the world, our people of the world have, and after Second World War, we have invented the Universal Declaration of Human Rights to stand above the old legal system. So, being said that, I will not go too much into details. Of course, we have a regional conventions in Europe. This is Convention 108, which is not only for Europe, because there are third countries who are also joining it, as it is an open convention. But for instance, my presentation, I use also as reference the APEC policy framework and the OECD policy framework, as well as the European Union regulation and legislation on privacy. So, being said that, let's move on to the main principles. There is one principle I would like to start with and to really put the emphasis on. I think if somebody understands this, it will understand a lot of things about data protection and privacy. So the issue is, you can find on the left upper side of the slides, that the individuals have to be control of their personal data, which means the whole trail of data. So I, as a person, have to know and have the right to know what is happening with my personal data in everywhere. I mean, in every each of the data processing activities, whomever are making it or are processing it. There are some overarching principles as well: the necessity, proportionate, and the purpose specification, or we can call it purpose limitation principles. I know we have discussed this in this PDPRDS a lot, and there are very good material already in the wiki for this, so I will not spend too much time on these principles, but I would like to go to a more specific principles and maybe to take an example and to showcase on the example how does it works in practice, because all these principles have some consequences and some legal implications for procedures. So the first one is the legitimate aim, or we can call it legitimate purpose. So for a data processing, we have to have a legitimate aim or a legitimate purpose. It basically comprises all the following principles, which starts by the lawful and fair means of data processing. Well, if we take the example of the online marketing, and I will try to demonstrate through this example those principles. So what does it mean, lawful? That it has to be regulated in a legal text, or at least it has to be, or in other jurisdiction, there is a requirement not to be banned or not to be forbidden by the legislation. So is the online marketing is not bound by any of the legislation? As far as I know, it is not bound. So it can say that it is lawful. What does that mean? Fair means of data processing. So, for example, if we are thinking about the means of data processing. So, for instance, gathering phone numbers on of data subjects for data processing for marketing purposes, is this legal? Yes, we said that it's already legal, but the means how we do it can make a lot of difference. So if we are, for instance, making phone calls at 10 o'clock in the evening, or if we are taking those phone numbers from other than public sources, that can mean unfair means of data processing. There is another very important legal base. This is the valid legal base, which can be law, consent, contract, vital interest of the individual. So, and it is so not only in the European legal text. It is the same provisions can be found in the APAC privacy framework or the OECD privacy framework. So we have to have a legal base to process this personal data, which out of which consent is one, but not the only one. There are some other very relevant principles as to the adequacy and the relevance of the and the non-excessive nature of the data processing and the data process, and of course there is the obligation for the data controller to keep the data accurate and where necessary up to date. There is what we call the last principles I would like to refer to. The data minimization principle is is basically saying, or let's put it bluntly, it's forbidding the bulk processing of data. So we are not processing data for the sake of it, because it's fun and we have means for doing it, but we are processing it for a reason, for a purpose. And during the processing of the data, we have to, and the data controller has the obligation to process the minimum amount of data which is fit for the purpose. So passing through the principles, there are of course exemptions to this data. To the principles, but also to the provisions, the data protection legislations provisions. So exemptions, as you can see on the slide, are from the purposes of the state security, public safety, monetary interests of the states, and the suppression of criminal offenses. And there are others as well, as the protecting the data subjects or the rights and freedom of others, and the statistical and research purposes. So these are the classical exemptions where the data protection principles or data protection rules are not in its entirety applicable, because usually, and this is the philosophy behind it, there are a higher interest. The interest of a society or the interest of a state behind those exemptions. For the state security is a good for everybody, is a common interest for a society. But being said that, as I was referring to the difference between interest and human rights, we have to make a balance, at least in some part, in some way. In all the countries I know, jurisdictions have came out with the same results, whether you call it as reasonable expectations or you call it as data minimization or purpose limitation principle. There is always conditions to use these exemptions. So because there is the underlying reason for this, because the processing of personal data for these purposes, namely national security purpose, law enforcement, etc., can constitute an interference with this human right. So it's obvious that it infringes those human rights. So we have to establish a criteria under which they are permissible or they can be done. So with this, I would like to come to the disclosure of data. This is we use a different different definitions for the same phenomenon. Disclosure of data, third party access to data. We used to use it in Europe or European legislation, and now we are tend to use further data processing. So for this, as Stephanie also referred to, secondary purpose of data. This is the Canadian definition. We say that the same rules as for the processing applies, which means that we have to fulfill the whole the principles for data processing and the provisions prescribed by the law for data processing. However, in this relation, there is a third party who enters into the picture, and there is a second purpose because there for the same if we would process the data for the same purposes, that will not be secondary purpose. So that will not be a further processing of data, of disclosure of data, as we would say. But there is always a secondary purposes for this kind of processing activity. But this is not; it will not be for the data controller, the original one, to define these purposes, but for the data controller who is asking for this purpose. The original data controller is usually defines the conditions and the procedures under which it can disclose the personal data, and for this it has to undergo the same test, whether if they comply with the principle of data processing or not. With this, I will arrive to my conclusion and the last topic I wanted to raise today. This is the question of accountability. So you can see on the slide there are in every each of the texts, legal texts I was referring to, there is a mention of accountability, and all the texts are legal texts are requiring data controller or holding data controller to be accountable for the use of the data protection principles during its operation. But being said that, we can conclude, if we come back to the previous slide I tried to explain, that the collection of personal data for a specific purpose would mean responsibility also for the implementation of the data of the privacy and data protection purposes for that purpose. So one data controller has always bear this in mind, whether if it's a private one or a public one. But these are the main principles that we normally we cannot differ from, because it is prescribed by law and it is prescribed basically everywhere in every legislation I am aware of. So we have to deal or take this into consideration and to really think about this issue when we are discussing about this, the purposes. It is good to enumerate purposes, but we have to also bear in mind that that the organization or the data controller, whether if it's ICANN or registries, that's maybe we can discuss it later, but the data controller as such will be held accountable for the data processing on under these purposes, which means all the principles that I have enumerated in the beginning, which goes from lawfulness to the fair means and the accuracy and the up-to-date nature of the data and so on and so forth. So with this, I would like to conclude my presentation by saying or by repeating that the Council of Europe would like to facilitate high-level meeting on the 13th of March during the Copenhagen meeting, where those kind of issues would be debated, or we hope that it would be debated in a high interest topic during 13th of March. But we are also working on bilateral meetings of the participants to this privacy meeting. With the interested communities or interested groups within ICANN to start a debate or start a dialogue on these issues and to have a better understanding not only for you how privacy principles maybe work or are interpreted by authorities or by legislators in different parts of the world, but also for us how to better understand how I can work. So with this, I really thank you for the opportunity. I'm open for any questions you might have.
Thank you very much, Peter. We'll get a chance to, everybody will get a chance to ask questions shortly, but Stephanie, let me give you an opportunity to follow up with anything additional you'd like to add before we go to Q&A.
Thanks, Chuck. It's Stephanie Farron for the record. I think probably Peter's pretty well covered it. Let's see how many questions we get in view of the time. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Stephanie. Chuck speaking again. So let's open it up for Q&A. Please raise your hand, or in the case of Samuel, you'll have to speak up if you want to get in a question or a comment. And let's take as much time we need to get clarification on the things that Stephanie and Peter have shared, because all of these things are going to become very relevant as we deliberate on whether on the sub-questions that we're going to ask with regard to data privacy and data protection and privacy. So please raise your hand if you have a question. Susan, you're first.
Thanks, Chuck. Susan Calgucci for the record. And thanks, Peter. That was very informative. So I'm wondering what of the information you provided today pertains to commercial entities.
Shall I answer directly, or?
Thanks, Peter. I should have said that. I would like you and Stephanie both to respond as you feel comfortable to the questions. There's no need for me to get in the middle of that. So just go ahead. Just identify yourself. Probably everybody will recognize your voice now, but identify yourself and share the response.
Right. So this is Peter. The first part of my presentation goes basically for all of the all type of data controller, whether if it's private or public. The second part, I mean the exemption part, I would say like this, goes mainly for the public one, but I included it here to demonstrate the logic according to which the legislation are designed for those purposes and to understand how narrowly or restrictedly are usually legislated when it comes to purposes pertaining to national security, public safety, and so on and so forth.
So I just have a couple follow-on questions here, and
Susan, remember to identify yourself. Everyone, remember to identify yourself. I know your voice well, but some people may not.
Yeah, Susan Calgucci for the record. So. A commercial entity would have the same rights to privacy of their data as you know, myself as an individual if I was working in living in Europe.
Yeah. No. I'm sorry. Maybe I didn't get your question at first. But no. The privacy is a private right. It's a human right. So which are linked to humans, so to human beings. There are discussions, and I'm open to share my views on this as well. There are discussions whether a private entity should be able to have the same rights as natural persons. But for now. In jurisdiction I know, privacy is a human right which only applies to human beings.
Okay, that's really helpful. And then I pasted in facebook.hu registration data record in the chat. The formatting is pretty, doesn't work very well. But I was wondering how Hungary defines purposes for collecting and displaying registration data. If your country has gone to that work and defined those purposes, then that might be helpful to inform our discussion. I was wondering if you could talk about that.
I'm sorry, I haven't heard very much. Can you repeat the question? Because
sure. So I was just wondering, for .hu, which I think is your home country,
yes.
Right, Hungary? So if the registry has defined purposes for collection and displaying in your own home country that would comply with these laws, if they've gone to the work of actually defining the purposes, is that something you can speak to? Is that something you could share with us? Because that might help inform our discussion.
I'm not at all aware about all this issue. So I have to inform myself on this because I really don't know how they worked in the past on this.
Well, do you feel like your country is in compliance?
Well, I cannot comment on this. I mean, I don't know how .hu is handled, and second, I'm not representing neither Hungary nor any other. Any other organization than the Council of Europe, and we. So I don't know. Simply and personally, to be open and honest, I don't know whether if they are compliant or not.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Susan and Peter, for that dialogue. Remember to say your name every time. This is Chuck, by the way. I have trouble doing that too. Most of us are learning each other's voices on our live calls, but when you read a transcript, that doesn't help. So please try to do that. Now, before I go to Alex, I want to confirm something that I think I heard in the dialogue that just occurred, and that is that the privacy principles that you talked about, Peter, in your presentation and that Stephanie talked about, they apply to, is it correct to say that they apply to personally identifiable information, to what we call PII, and not to other types of information? And Peter and Stephanie, you can both respond to that. And you'll note that there's been some discussion of this in the chat as well.
My short answer, this is Peter, my short answer would be yes.
Okay. Thank you.
As I already explained, that human rights are applicable to humans, so PII only applies to personally identifiable information.
Okay. And for those that are concerned about our restriction right now and talking about thin data, we're going to get specifically look at thin data as we proceed. So bear with us, please.
Yes.
Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Chuck. Thank you. This is Alex Deacon for the record. So thanks, Peter, for this. I think it's very helpful for me, at least, as I'm definitely not an expert. I wanted to chat about exceptions, and I understand and agree with the need for the proper balance and proportionality. But specifically, I'm curious about the exception that allows data processing for the rights and freedoms of others. I'm curious as to your thoughts, kind of generally, about that specific statement. But I think more generally, I'm curious how should these exceptions inform our discussions in this working group? How should we be taking these exceptions into account when determining not only the purpose, but also when we get into the details of what data should be collected and how it should be processed and when and if and how it should be disclosed. Thanks.
Peter, would you like to respond to that?
Yes. Yeah, this is Peter. So this is one of the beauty of the human rights law and human rights legislation. So, for instance, there are two informational rights, which we call the informational rights, the right to privacy, right to data protection, and freedom of freedom of expression. We have thousands and thousands of pages of case law on this, how, for example, the Court of Justice here in Strasbourg defined the way of making a balance, because those are in situations are contradicting rights, because if something is public, then it's not private anymore. So how you can how one should decide whether if it's if I disclose it, if I don't disclose, or if I make it public or I don't make it public. This is, I think, because I'm a lawyer, and I tend to listen to what courts are saying, as they are very vocal and getting more and more importance on these issues. I would use those cases. We have cases like in Europe of high courts, a Strasbourg court, but even the Luxembourg court can be also of use on these issues. But we also have the U.S. High Court and several U.S. courts, and these are the two main jurisdictions I already learned about. I would say like this, but I would be happy also to know more about maybe Canada. We have this or other part of the world, but I think that the solution that jurisdiction the case law can give, we cannot miss too much. I mean, if we follow them, because at the end they will judge the specific cases if there are any.
Thank you, Peter. This is Chuck again. And before I go to Stephanie, I'd like all of you to note any questions you have, not only for the meeting today, but hopefully in Copenhagen, we will have opportunity to ask the data commissioners there some very specific questions to get the clarity that we need. So please keep a record of those so that we can compile that in preparation for our meetings in Copenhagen that Marika mentioned at the beginning of our call. Stephanie, it's your turn.
Thanks very much. I just wanted to clarify this matter of commercial versus personal data. It varies by jurisdiction whether the employees of a company are considered to have rights with respect to data protection on the Internet in particular. And, for instance, in Canada, we consented to a carve-out for business card information. Unfortunately, because it's rather a huge carve-out. Various jurisdictions have come up with whatever is required. You will notice that in the early documents sent to us by the data protection commissioners on this topic, they have pointed out that in, for instance, Germany, you have to seek the consent of employees before you put their name and phone number up on the Internet public registry. So we have to remember that the employees of companies have personal information rights, at least at a high level, if not in the letter of the law, and that there are other human rights that are implicated with respect to small groups and organizations that are registering a domain name. So a lot of the argument that took place in the PPSAI with respect to the small organizations being able to use privacy proxy services is they don't have the means to hire lawyers or whatever to protect their data, and that exposing the data of employees may expose them to risk. So that is a different right that is specified in the Constitution, and I didn't go back on that, but I mean the sorting out of what ICANN has to do with respect to personal data and data of identifiable organizations and individuals rests not entirely on data protection law. It also rests on other human rights law and constitutional protection. So I just wanted to point that out. I see Steve has a question, and I'll read it and respond later if that's okay. Thanks.
Stephanie, go ahead and read it and respond right now if you'd like. This is Chuck.
They may or may not be data protection rights, depending on which country you're in and how exposed you are. For instance, if I am the secretary of a small church somewhere and I'm running the website and I am the person that unwittingly registers the domain name, and then I discover that my home address and home phone number are exposed on the Internet, that would be my personal information, particularly if I'm a volunteer. So, and in most civil society organizations, such as churches, synagogues, political groups, these people are volunteers. So that is personal information. And I think one of the problems that we face, getting back to that whole issue of notice and choice, the problem with notice and choice is nobody likes reading Apple's 80-page legal agreement, nor has the concept of short notices, which was put forward by Hunton and Williams, among others, really succeeded because you lawyers will say, well, a short notice just doesn't give enough legal notification of what's going on. So when it comes to ICANN and the notice that is required by registrars to inform individuals about their data protection rights, I don't see anything on my registrar's website that informs me of my data protection rights. I don't see it in my contract, and I just haven't got around to complaining yet. These are issues that we have to bear in mind. The notice requirement is going to be pretty extensive if we start looking at that. Thanks.
Thanks, Stephanie. Chuck again. Susan, go ahead.
Susan Calgucci for the record. Stephanie, I have no interest. I don't think we need to make it extremely difficult for mom and pop businesses. And I think we can, there is proxy registration. There's some avenues, and we could build a stronger protection for them, but I do think this group has a duty not to convey individual human rights, personal rights, to a commercial entity. Facebook doesn't deserve that protection, and we don't ask for that protection. I don't think, yes, it's a little bit of a gray area. Where you go from somebody like Facebook and Google all the way down to somebody, acting as registrant for their church. I think somebody used this one as their church, domain name. But I think that we can't keep having this discussion without realizing we have two, at least, there could be more, complete groups of data that cannot be treated the same. That's just my point of view. One question I had for you also, because and it's similar to the question I asked Peter, was I think there's some value out there in the CCNSO that we haven't sort of leveraged yet. But I was wondering if .ca, CIRA, has the registry, has defined purposes for collection and display of the registration data for a .ca, because they definitely make a difference between a individual's domain name and a company domain name or commercial entity domain name. So I was wondering if you had any perspective on that, how CIRA defines those purposes.
This is Chuck. Stephanie, if you'd like to respond, if you can, that would be okay.
I haven't checked on CIRA's current privacy policy. I would like to point out that there is considerable confusion, in my view, in the Data Protection Commissioner's community as to the differences between the CCTLDs and the GTLDs. Number one, they don't understand that I shouldn't just say blanket they, but I think there are plenty of data protection commissioners who have not dealt with complaints. If you haven't dealt with complaints and you haven't been approached by your CCTLD to assist them in developing policy, and I would say that's an abnormality when the CCTLDs reach out, then you're likely blissfully unaware of the arcane nature of how domains are allocated on the Internet. So they can be forgiven for not understanding the distinction between the CCTLD rules and the GTLD rules. Now, secondly, I did the first CIRA policy, and I was appalled that they wanted things like a passport, but there is a requirement in Canada that you have a Canadian in order to get a, or there was at the time, in order to get a .ca domain. So obviously it's much easier if you're a company, there are certain requirements. And if you're an individual, then you have to prove your Canadian existence, or you did. As I say, I haven't checked lately. I know they've had several revisions. So I think that I would just like wave a flag of caution. If we look at the CCTLDs, some of them have good practices. Others have practices that are quite different. In other words, if I'm just registering a GTLD and there's no requirement for me to identify my nationality, then I'm not going to produce a passport. Am I making that clear? Thanks.
Thanks, Stephanie. So before I go to Maxime, hopefully it's clear to everybody, and I think we all knew this before we started, that there's lots of variation depending on what jurisdiction we're in. Secondly, I want to say I know we're at a very high level right now. We're going to and let's realize that and not get too worried about that. We're going to have to, as we deliberate on specific data elements, we're going to have to, I think it'll be easier for us to answer some of the questions that need to be answered. So we will get there. So bear with us as we do that. Lots of good discussion in the chat, lots of good questions raised in the chat. When we get into specific deliberation of data elements, and I hope we get to the thin data elements today, I'm certainly going to try to do that. It'll be easier for us to try and reach some resolution on what recommendations we will make. And obviously those are going to have to vary by jurisdiction, and it's not as if we're going to cover every jurisdiction in the world individually. That would probably be impossible. So bear with us on this. Now, I want to, before I go to Maxime, there was some, and you may need to scroll back in the chat if you didn't read it, but Alex had asked a question in the chat about who data controllers are, and you heard Peter use the term data controller. Stephanie gave what I thought was a very helpful definition of data, or not a definition, but rather illustration of who the data controllers are, ICANN being one, registries and registrars in a different sense, and in other cases they're data processors. So if you didn't see that exchange between Alex and Stephanie, look over the chat later or scroll back up there now. I thought that was very helpful because I think the term data controller is going to be a very important one as we move forward. So please take a look at that if you didn't see that. Maxime, now I'll turn it over to you.
Maxime Alzoba, for the record, do you hear?
What was that? I didn't hear.
Okay. Maxime Alzoba, for the record, do you hear me?
Yes.
The question is, there is no formal method of distinguishing the fields which constitute personal data from the fields which do not right now. Do we need to review possibility of introduction of special flag of some kind, saying that this particular set of records constitutes personal data or not? Thanks.
Thank you, Maxim. And that's something we could decide to do. I don't think we can answer that question right now, but one of our requirements could be something like you're suggesting. Maybe it won't be. But that's certainly an option for us to consider, and we're going to have to look at that because one of our responsibilities will be to design a system, if there is a new system, that would properly comply with data protection law in various jurisdictions. So keep that in mind. That may be an implementation issue that we have to deal with later on. Theo, your turn.
Thanks, Dirk, and this is Theo for the record. So the last hour I've been hearing a lot about fundamental rights, privacy issues, privacy laws, and this is more of a comment than a question, actually. But I've the feeling here that when we actually going into these deliberations, I think we actually should be sort of using privacy by design to enter those deliberations, because I have the feeling that we have a lot to talk about, but we are not laying a sort of fundamental layer on which these discussions should be based on. And from what I'm seeing, that ICANN can be held liable, or is the data controller, I'm getting pretty nervous there. End of comment. Thanks, you, Chuck.
You're welcome, Theo, and I think I share the nervousness. It's not a black and white issue. If nothing else has come across in this session, I think that's one of the key points. So we're going to have to deal with that, and it's not going to be an easy task. But I think we're starting to lay a foundation that will help us hopefully remove some of our nervousness, although it may never go away totally. So I want to make sure, at least get, I think we have at least in the chat had some good clarification in terms of what data controller means, and it may vary in terms of the particular data, as Stephanie described in her chat comment. I think we've identified that we're talking about personally identifiable information, although what we're going to have to decide is what is personally identifiable information for particular data elements. So the question I have for Peter and Stephanie first, but then open it up to discussion for the whole group, is, are there any of the thin data elements, as we've defined them in over the last few weeks, considered personally identifiable information?
Well, this is Peter.
Can I jump in here? It's Stephanie. The use of the term personally identifiable information is, in my view, problematic. I realize it's come into common parlance. It's a U.S.-based expression. But I think, seeks to avoid the problem of identification. So a small subset of thin data that appears in a public registry may not be, in quotes, personally identifiable because there's no name, there's no address, there's no phone number. But if it is traceable through some other thing back to a registry that connects that data with the individual, then it is, whether it is generated, and we had quite a heated discussion on the chat about this, or whether it is gathered from the individual, it's personal data in that it refers to an individual. When I used to argue about this in government, I always used the line, and I'm sorry to abuse the FBI, but that's what I used to say. If it's good enough for the FBI to arrest me, then it's personal data. I mean, if a timestamp links me to an action which can be detected through my, I don't know, credit card to find me, and I get arrested because of that, that is still personal data. So this is not to say that you can't release it. This is where I got really frustrated with this discussion on, you know, the collection, use, and disclosure. We may all agree that it is reasonable to expose a subset of the data, but if the data linkage is there, then it is still personal data. And this has become more and more an issue as we look at the Internet of Things and the data that we generate by, you know, our appliances. You know, my refrigerator is not personal, but if I'm the only one in the house and the refrigerator is talking about what I just put in it, then those purchases are linked to me. So, I mean, these are important decisions from the perspective of human rights and the application of data protection law. So I'm not trying to stop disclosure of thin data, which is something I think folks thought I was trying to do. I'm trying to get intellectual clarity about what this stuff is. One example, if I can cite it to you, that had me and my legal counsel banging our heads on the floor, on the table, was a government example where there was two filing cabinets side by side, one with all kinds of personal information about a particular native population and another with data that had been de-identified. And it required a deputy minister's letter to link the very sensitive health data with the identity of the individuals. Therefore, the health data was considered not to be personal information. Now, this is a distinction that the man in the Clapham omnibus would know is wrong. This is the kind of sort of legal sophistry we get to in these discussions. Thanks.
Stephanie, so you would use the term personal data instead of PII? This is Chuck.
Yes. It's clear.
Okay, that's fine. I just want to make sure I got that right. Now, the basis for my question on whether any thin data elements are considered personal data, I'll say personal data now, okay, would you consider any of those elements personal data? And the reason I'm asking that is we need to decide what data is impacted by the data protection laws in whatever jurisdiction we're doing. So let me ask you, would you consider any of the thin data elements that we've been looking at as personal data? That's to you, Stephanie.
Sorry, I was on mute. This is Stephanie again. I would think that anything generated about my domain name that I registered as an individual could be considered to be personal. I mean, I would need to look at those data elements that are up there.
So if we take that approach, then you would consider everything personal data?
Well,
in other words, everything has to comply with the data protection laws, all data elements.
Right. And that solves, I know that sounds like it just throws you right into the, volcano. But actually, no. I mean, then you start sorting out, okay, which data is it reasonable to ask be disclosed in the concept of a of getting a domain name. I mean, we got into this, unfortunately, unbeknownst to me, I used an expression that had come up many, many years ago in the debates, the idea of a driver's license, and Fab will recall seizing on that. But, I mean, there is a certain amount of data that you recognize you have a public responsibility to disclose, and that's, I would argue, what we should be putting out in the thin data.
This is Chuck. Greg's been very patient. So Greg, Aaron, you're up.
Thank you, Chuck. This is Greg. I think Stephanie is talking about a really slippery slope here. I think she's talking about two things. And you correct me, Stephanie. You're saying that everything's personally identifiable, but you're saying that there are circumstances under which some of that might be revealed. But what I see after reading some of these data protection laws is that sometimes depends on circumstance. Like IP addresses are not always personally identifiable, and that depends upon a set of circumstances. But what I do see is that the European ccTLD registries publish thin data, and they have gotten that collection and publication vetted six ways to Sunday, and they all do it. And you can't say it depends, but then we see the practice, which has obviously been vetted by a bunch of people. Now, ultimately, this is directed towards leaders of the working group. I don't think this group is going to be able to proceed very far without some professional legal advice. We can talk about it amongst ourselves, but at some point we're going to have to get some legal advice on some of these questions, just as the THIC Who Is Working Group did, and just as the EWG did. And we ought to perhaps be reusing and revisiting some of the advice that the EWG did if it's duplicative. But what I hear Stephanie saying is it seems like a slippery slope, and it doesn't necessarily seem consistent with what I've read, although I'm not an expert, I have to say. And it doesn't seem to fit with what I see out there in the industry going on, especially in the ccTLDs. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. This is Chuck again. Peter, I'm sorry. You started to talk a long time ago, and I never did get back to you. So please jump in.
No. Thank you very much. This is Peter. So this is a crucial question. So you heard me about how to interpret or how to what are the articulation of some of the European legislation. So for this, let me borrow some thoughts from other jurisdiction, the EPIC framework, EPIC privacy framework. So it says, because it defines the definition of personal information, which means any information about an identified or identifiable individual, and it. Let me just read the explanation, because there is an explanation attached to it. It will take 2 minutes, but I think it's worth to listen to it. The principles have been drafted against a background in which some economies, because it's basically centered on economic cooperation, have well-established privacy laws and or practices, while others may be considering the issues. Of those with already settled policies, not all treat personal information in exactly the same way. So some, for example, may draw distinctions between information that is readily searchable and other information. Despite these differences, this framework, the APEC privacy framework, has been drafted to promote a consistent approach among the information privacy regimes of APEC economies. This framework is intended to apply to information about natural living persons, not legal persons. The APEC privacy framework applies to personal information which is information that can be used to identify an individual. It also includes information that would not meet this criteria alone, but when put together with other information, would identify an individual. So this is a possible response to it. To the questions. This is again a regional cooperation framework. It's based on an economy, so it's not exactly ICANN context, but I think we can have some inspiration from this text or from other texts. We also have a recommendation. The Council of Europe just published the recommendation on data protection issues on big data environment, where it is way more difficult to find out what is the personal data or what is not in a big data context. But also for this I can provide with this recommendation, and we can have, or the group can have, inspiration from those texts, I think. Hello? Anybody there? Hello?
I'm sorry, I was on mute.
Okay.
So,
right.
If you would send that, Peter, thank you very much. If you would send
right.
that definition to the group, that would be much appreciated. Now, to me, the way I understood that, it's pretty broad, and kind of confirms what Stephanie was saying, that personal information covers just about anything if it can be connected with some other things to identify somebody. That's not very helpful for us, as I think Greg kind of pointed out, that puts us in an awkward situation. So maybe what we should be asking, and I'm throwing this out for discussion, maybe what what we need to focus on is not whether data is personal or not, because it sounds like anything could be defined as personal, although we need to make the distinction with commercial organizations, with legal organizations, is we're just going to have to look at each data element, I think, and decide whether it can be collected, whether it can be disclosed, and Stephanie indicated that she's not arguing that this information can't be disclosed because it's personal. And that may be the questions we should be looking at rather than whether it's personal or not, except to distinguish between commercial businesses and so forth. Now, I throw that out. Peter, do you want to follow up on that?
No, not necessarily. No, I don't know. No.
Okay, Stephanie?
Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I think that's a really useful distinction, Chuck. It's my observation that it's very convenient to say something is not personal data, but it is a gray area these days more than ever, and it's much more useful to not panic about whether something is personal data, but to discuss what your accountability and your responsibility is to disclose and to disclose or use. And I think that's where we should be heading, and quit panicking about, we can argue till the cows come home over whether something's personal data or not, and it will vary by jurisdiction and by carve-out. We should never have said that business card data was not personal information for the purposes of that act. But that was the political carve-out that happened at the last minute in our jurisdiction. You will find similar, really odd carve-outs all around the world. That doesn't help us at ICANN. We should be building privacy by design, as Teo said. Thanks.
Thanks, Stephanie. This is Chuck. Susan, go ahead. And we are notice that we are just about done for the day with our time limit, so I'll bring it to a close in a moment. But go ahead, Susan.
So I just a quick comment, Susan Kovich, for the record. I just think we also need to balance the value of having this information displayed and the purposes and the use. The Thin Who Is data is extremely valuable to me managing a corporate registration. And so I think that, you know, and it's also valuable, in my opinion, for an individual, you know, if all of a sudden there's an update or the domain name, you know, that you didn't do, the registrar or registry or someone hacked in and to the registrar and made a change to your registration, that's your first clue. You know, your creation date is important for a lot of reasons. You want to make sure that data always is consistent and doesn't change unless you have proactively changed it. This doesn't really show all the statuses, but if somehow if Facebook.com becomes unlocked at the registry, that's a huge security threat, not only for the domain registration, but for 1.8 billion users. So I just think that we need to balance, you know, any of this data, the harm that could happen by not having that data to rely on and protecting that data.
This is Chuck again. Thanks, Susan. And we will look at the thin data elements one by one and talk about whether they meet the data protection laws as they apply to different jurisdictions. So don't know if we'll get to that next week or not, but we are out of time for this week. Now, my assessment is that we may not have reached any conclusions on anything today, so that we don't need to test those via a poll, but I if somebody thinks there is something we should evaluate via a poll in the next few days, please speak up and let me know. So we're obviously going to have to continue our agenda that we mapped out, because we didn't get through it all this week. We will continue it next week. I hope that everybody that's on it this week can continue next week. I know that's probably impossible, but we're going to have to continue this discussion next week, and we as a leadership team will take a look at it and see if we can reach some decisions in terms of how best to continue the discussion and begin to make some progress with regard to the specific data elements. So bear with us. Thanks, Peter and Stephanie, for playing a special part in this. I'm sure you will continue to do that as we continue to move forward in our working group. If nothing else, I think we realize even more than ever the complexities of what we're dealing with. But I think if we're all cooperative, we will be able to come up with some recommendations that will be helpful. Any questions or anything else that we should cover that I missed, please let us know right now. Okay. Well, thanks, everybody. This is Chuck again. I will adjourn the meeting now, and the recording can stop. Have a good rest of the week.
Thank you.